Hello. Welcome to the podcast on insurance contract project. Today we would like to talk about the exposure draft of proposed amendments to IFRS 4, which the ISB released on 9th of December. These amendments deal with applying IFRS 9 financial instruments with IFRS 4 insurance contracts. My name is Yulia Feigina. I am a senior technical manager with the ISB, and I'm joined today by Daryl Scott, the member of the ISB. Before I introduce the proposed amendments, Daryl, could you tell us about why the ISB has made those proposals?
Thanks, Yulia. The ISB has heard from constituents over the last several months, particularly in constituents in the insurance industry, that the assets and liabilities on their balance sheets are very closely related. This is something obviously we're aware of and we agree. As a consequence of that statement, the fact that IFRS 9 is being introduced at a period of time before IFRS 4 is introduced, they believe have created certain problems for them in their internal process. The first is that IFRS 9 is a looking forward statement. It will cause a change in the way they account for assets, and without an accompanying change in the way they account for their liabilities, they are concerned that this will create a volatility in their financial statements, and that that volatility will not be necessarily reflective of the underlying business that's they're doing. A second issue is that they're concerned that a user base that has to deal with two fairly quick changes, one the change to IFRS 9 on the asset side of their balance sheet, and the other the following on change when the new IFRS 4 insurance standard comes online, will create or will cause some confusion for those users. The third reason that they are concerned about is that they may in fact have to end up doing two changes as a consequence of this. The first is adopting IFRS 9 on 2018 when that standard is due, and then later when the new IFRS 4 changes come in or the new insurance changes come in, they may have to reconsider some of the changes they made as a consequence of IFRS 9. So they've identified those three issues as the primary reason why they believe the mismatch of the date between the new insurance standard and IFRS 9 causes problems. The board considered this and thinks that there is some rationale to that, and consequently we're proposing a package which we believe will provide some relief to them in adopting IFRS 9.
Thank you, Daryl. So the ISB listened to those concerns and proposed, as Daryl mentioned, two approaches in the recent exposure draft. One approach is a so-called overlay approach, and that approach will be available for all entities that issue insurance contracts, and that approach would apply to some financial assets held by those entities. There is also a temporary exemption from applying IFRS 9, or a so-called deferral approach, and that approach would be available only for some entities that issue insurance contracts, but would apply to all financial assets held by those entities. Daryl, could you talk a little bit about why the ISB decided that two approaches were needed to address concerns raised?
So I think, Yulia, the starting point for the board in thinking about this was that we were aware that this, as I mentioned in the introduction, relates directly to the interaction between IFRS 4 on the liability side and the assets, the IFRS 9 assets. The overlay approach the board felt was a way of targeting exactly the assets that were being affected, and therefore we could resolve for insurers the volatility concern that they had, the issue of the change in performance measurements that occurred as a consequence of giving effect to the asset change first and the liability change later. We felt that the overlay approach then addressed what we think is the primary concern, which is the accounting confusion created by the two-step process. We are aware, though, that in some circumstances there is a direct impact on cost as well, and these are the other two problems that we talked about, the confusion issue and the double adoption of IFRS 9 issue. We think that that is only partially addressed by an overlay approach. So we looked at a second approach, which is the deferral approach, and we think that the deferral approach operates in those limited circumstances where an entity is predominantly engaged in insurance and where you can actually exempt the whole entity from applying IFRS 9.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Let's talk in a little bit more detail about each of those proposed approaches. So the overlay approach is about designating financial assets that relate to insurance activities or financial assets that relate to contracts in the scope of IFRS 4. And for those financial assets that an entity designates as related to insurance activities, an entity would essentially be allowed to remove the effects of introduction of IFRS 9 from profit or loss. So as a result, those financial assets would be accounted under IFRS 9 on the balance sheet, but essentially accounted for under IAS 39 for the purposes of information in profit or loss. And that adjustment in profit or loss could be done in different ways. For example, an entity could present it as a single line adjustment in profit or loss, or alternatively, an entity could adjust each individual affected line item in profit or loss. And we have heard some preliminary feedback on those proposals, and we heard questions and even concerns about the flexibility embedded in the designation approach and also in the presentation in profit or loss. And we also heard some questions and concerns about the costs that could be created by essentially applying both IAS 39 and IFRS 9 to a subset of financial assets. Daryl, perhaps you could talk a little bit why the ASB decided to go with the designation and the flexible presentation, and your thoughts on costs as well.
So I think the important thing about the overlay approach and the particularly attractive thing about the overlay approach from the ISB perspective is that the balance sheet reporting continues to reflect IFRS 9 as it is intended to be applied. What that does is it provides a very solid base of information for users, a very comparable base of information, because it'll be the same for all insurance entities that apply this approach as well as for all other entities that don't qualify either for this approach or, in fact, for any other approach. So essentially what you've got is your balance sheet is a reliable set of information produced in a way that the board believes most accurately reflects the economics. You get to use IFRS 9 in its entirety. Because of that, and perhaps the second point to make, is that the adjustment to the income statement, which is the differentiator from IFRS 9, or the adjustment to profit and loss, which is the differentiator from IFRS 9, is very transparent. Because of those two factors, a solid IFRS 9 balance sheet base and a very transparent adjustment to the income statement, the ISB was of the view that we were more comfortable in terms of how the adjustment was actually determined, because it was done in a very transparent way. So as a starting point, we've allowed entities to designate the assets that relate to the liabilities. That designation is, to all intents and purposes, based on the way the entity itself sees the assets that relate to the liabilities. So there's a lot of freedom of choice in that. Some people would feel that we've almost been too free in that. But we believe that because there are consequences to designating assets that don't relate to the liabilities, those consequences are that you might introduce volatility. We think that there's an element of self-governing in that process in itself. So from a designation perspective, we're comfortable. We also believe that insurers have many of their own systems, like asset liability management systems, that will allow them to easily determine which assets should be designated in the process. In regard to the presentation approach, this is something that has been raised by some users who are a little bit concerned. Some users, and perhaps even some preparers, that are a little bit concerned that we're allowing pretty much presentation to occur as we like. But we believe that, firstly, we have governance around presentation under IAS 1 and under IFRS 9 as it stands. Those standards both require that an entity consider the presentation that will best help users understand what's happening in their financial statements. And we think that's sufficient of a governance around the process. So it depends entirely on how the insurer chooses to tell their story. And I think we're comfortable that, again, given the governors that we've got, a consistent measurement and classification process and a single transparent line that will show up as to what the adjustment is, we think that we're actually presenting sufficient information for users to draw their own conclusions on that. The third element, which I think is the cost one, is perhaps the one that is most difficult for us to understand at this stage, and where we'd be looking for a lot more insight from people as they look at our exposure draft over the next couple of months. The board views the cost element as being firstly in two parts. The first is the incremental cost that organizations will have to incur in any case in adopting IFRS 9. So we think that's simply a timing difference. If you're going to put in place certain mechanisms to make IFRS 9 easier to work in your organization, this simply requires that you put it in now, as opposed to potentially putting it in later. And so we don't think that is necessarily an additional cost so much as a timing of cost. The second are the costs that relate to applying this approach specifically. And as I say, we don't believe that those costs should be significant, but we look forward to the type of feedback we'll get on this process over the next couple of months.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. So moving on to the deferral approach or the temporary exemption from IFRS 9. So as Daryl mentioned earlier, this approach is targeted at pure insurers. Under this approach, an entity would need to determine where it is a predominantly insurer. And the way an entity would determine that is by comparing the level of its liabilities that are in the scope of IFRS 4 with its total liabilities. And the ISB has not specified any quantitative threshold in making that assessment, but did indicate that if, for example, 75% of entities' liabilities arise from insurance activities and 25% arise from other types of activities, that would not be high enough and the entity would not be considered predominantly an insurer. So if an entity concludes that it passes the assessment, then it would be able to apply the deferral approach to all its financial assets. In other words, all financial assets of such an entity would be accounted for under IAS 39, both for balance sheet and profit or loss purposes. And with respect to deferral approach, again, we've had some preliminary feedback and some preliminary questions and concerns. And some of those questions relate to why the ISB required that the predominance assessment takes place at the reporting entity level, unlike with the overlay approach where different approaches could be applied to different assets. And we also had questions about why the predominance threshold is so high and why the test is so strict. And on the other hand, we heard other types of concerns which relate to comparability and how users of financial statements would be able to do their analysis and compare entities that apply the deferral approach and those that don't. Daryl, perhaps you could spoke to those points.
So I think it's fair to say, starting out on the deferral approach, that from a board perspective, we were probably more uncomfortable in contemplating deferral. And the reason behind that is that essentially you are losing, in a deferral approach, all of the benefits that would potentially come from applying IFRS 9. Because you're losing that, those benefits of applying it on the balance sheet, you're also not getting transparency about what the income statement effect would have been of having applying IFRS 9. The board felt that this was a approach that we felt should be a lot more constrained. We also had a concern that if we were to allow IFRS 9, allow IAS 39 or allow a deferral of IFRS 9 only in limited circumstances or in part of the entity, what you would end up with is the confusion of having both IFRS 9 and IFRS 9 operating within a single entity. And that would create an additional issue in that your balance sheet would be neither one nor the other. It would have components of both of those in it. So the board felt a lot more reluctant about going down this path. And for that reason, we've gone down or taken an approach of predominance, which suggests that what we're looking to do is to try and focus the deferral approach only on those entities that are, quote-unquote, pure insurers. Those entities that are predominantly involved in insurance and have very limited other activities. In terms of the level that we set it, the primary concern about setting it at a different level, and the level we set it at is the reporting entity, the very top part of the group. If you are not a predominant insurer at that level, you fail the test and you can't use this approach. Going any further down within the entity, going to a different level, brings this problem of mixed assets reporting. So some IAS 39, some IFRS 9, and the confusion that we believe that would create about understanding what the balance sheet of an entity actually means. That also leads us to the predominance test, and the strictness of the predominance test is primarily focused on the fact that we don't want too many non-insurance assets pulled into this process. And relaxing the predominance test would by definition mean that assets that were not related to insurance processes were included in the process. The final issue that we're hearing about a lot is comparability, and I've got a lot of sympathy with comparability. The comparability issue is that some insurance companies would be able to apply the deferral approach and some would not, and that's absolutely valid. Some will have IAS 39 on their balance sheet, some will have IFRS 9 on their balance sheet. I think the mere decision of the board to allow a deferral in any circumstance means that that comparability issue comes up. It is an approach that we've thought very long and hard about in terms of going down deferral. We've also decided, at the urging, I think, of many of our constituents, to make this approach optional, which means that the comparability issue is going to be there as well, simply because some insurers, even if they are allowed to use deferral, may choose not to. So we think that comparability is likely to be an issue in any case, but we think that is a cost of the approach that we're taking. And so where you draw the line on comparability is not necessarily going to be the issue. And so we've really focused on drawing the line on the other considerations, specifically the confusion that might be created by having a mixed model.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. And in terms of the next steps, so the comment period on the exposure draft closes on 8th of February, and we're very much looking forward to receiving formal response on our proposals. And once we receive that feedback, we will work on finalizing those amendments as soon as possible.